Do you ever feel stuck, like you're living your life on autopilot? Are you ready to shift into high gear and reach the success you so richly deserve? Welcome to the Play Big Movement podcast. I am your host, Sharon Lecter, entrepreneur, business strategist, and best-selling author. Playing big is not about settling for good enough or being comfortable. It is about reaching your highest potential and achieving your greatest success. Join me in my Play Big movement as I interview top experts in business, money, and entrepreneurship, all ready to serve you and to help you play big, be number one in your field, live your legacy, and create maximum impact. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this segment of the Play Big Movement podcast. I am Sharon Lecter, your host, and I am delighted to introduce a dear friend. We've known each other, I think, over 28 years, John. I was trying to do math. John Burley, thank you so much for sharing yourself today.
Oh, Sharon, my pleasure. I always enjoyed the times we had. You know, we just a month or so ago had lunch, and it was just always lovely. And I think I walk away every time. It's like, we should do this more. We're just both so darn busy enjoying life and
doing
our work.
And you have been happily married for how many years? I think you just
33
years. Yep. 33. Mike and I are on 44 this year.
Yeah.
You've got a wonderful family, a son and a daughter who are all involved in your business.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
Yeah. And today we're going to talk about not just, you know, the fact that you have a huge heart and your business is extremely successful, but you didn't go along with the norm. You found a way in real estate investing. You took that path less traveled and created a whole industry on your own, didn't you?
Yeah, we've been really blessed, which of course, you know, in today's world is a nice way of saying we worked really, really hard for a really, really long time. I grew up in a little town, and there were, that I knew of, three, and it was men back then, but three families that were decamillionaires, you know, and I looked at what they did, you know, in my early teens before 10, you know, first of all, you know, in that era, they all worked 80 plus hours a week for decades and decades to create what they did. They had all put themselves in the position where they were the owner. So if it went great, they reaped the rewards. And if it didn't, they paid the price. And then they found something that they really loved, that they were really good at, and they did it. And so when we did the, you know, the real estate, I was kind of look at, you know, I drank the Kool-Aid. I went to actually the guys who taught the guys and gals who taught the guys and gals of today is who I learned from. So I learned from the names back in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, you know, Nickerson and Kuhn and Lowry and Allen. And then there was a lot of smaller guys, but who had huge runs on the board. Because in that era, if you hadn't done 100 property deals, no one even thought of putting you on a stage. And there was no social media. So you couldn't just pretend you were an expert on two deals. I mean, you actually, and students got to ask questions. So they had to actually be able to answer them. And, you know, it was all, when I went to the event, it was kind of like, to me, I was 18 years old. It was like I drank the Kool-Aid, but I drank the wrong flavor. I drank lime Kool-Aid. And we all know the red stuff's the best stuff. And so it was all about how to do real estate with no money down and trying to get rich quick on flips. And that was everything they talked about. It's like literally when I was at an event like 90 days ago, big name, won't say the name, and literally he was using the exact same talk that I saw Nickerson do in 79. I mean, it was verbatim, almost word for word. It was like, credit the source, buddy. And it's just the same thing. They're literally teaching models that are 30, 40, 50 years old that didn't work that good back then. But back then, it was a lot easier. There was no computers. So no one had the information except for those who went worked at heart. I mean, nobody knew what things were worth. Nobody knew what things were priced at. The MLS was a phone book, you know, and you had to wait 30 days to get the new listings if you missed it. And so, you know, I did some of the stuff that they talked about, and I had a securities company, a brokerage. And when I talked to some of my very wealthy clients, and I've been between the private equity real estate and the brokerage business, you know, I've had over 1,000 clients that were decamillionaires to billionaires. And it's like, they didn't do any things that these guys all say you're supposed to do. They weren't over leveraged, a small percentage, less than 2% if they were in their 50s, even had a mortgage on their own home. It was like the exact opposite of everything that all the quote unquote experts say. And I just looked at what they did, and then they were just kind of like going, well, sure, John, you could probably do real estate with no money, but the real question is why? Why would you waste your time your insecurities. You raise money for a living. Just do it for real estate, you know, and then your fear and your story and all that stuff kicks in. And then I started to do it. And what I looked at when I went in from day one in real estate, unlike everybody else that I ever met, I knew I wanted to build a big portfolio. I started a private equity company. We were actually, it was 1989. I was actually the first company about 20 years ahead of most of Wall Street. I left Wall Street and I formed a private equity company, real estate. And what we did was primarily, we've done all real estate classes still on it, but we mainly did single family homes. Not because I like single family homes more or love them, or I was hardcore trained by Wall Street. I don't have any emotional involvement with my asset classes. I don't care. They're just silly little houses. They made more money. And everybody knew they made more money. Wall Street knew they made more money. We all knew they made more money, but they were more work. And Wall Street, if you guys don't know this by now, 98% of Wall Street's models, 98% of the operators, including the biggest names, most of them, all they do is work for fees. They're not working to make a profit. They're not working to make money. They're not working to make you rich. And if they try and do both, it confuses them. So people go like, well, the Wolf of Wall Street, they talked about that. We don't do win-win. And you know, those movies really, like, no. They toned those movies so down. They were way more evil than the movie portrayed, intentionally and deliberately. It wasn't about making clients money. And so it's like, you know, I wanted to form a private equity company. And I knew a guy who in the 60s and 70s, he's pretty legendary. He went over 20 years and he never lost in a quarter. For 20 straight years, just one of the ultimate legends of Wall Street. Didn't know him well, but I knew him a bit. And he required 30% ownership. So if you dropped 100 million in, 30 million was his. And he kept it forever. And so he worked for returns. And it was like, wow. And it's like, so what if I did this? And instead of just doing it mom and pop, what if I did this in a much bigger way with real estate? And so we went in from day one. The whole idea was, we're going to buy assets that created cash flow, and that's all we wanted. And if we just kept creating cash flow and creating cash flow and creating cash flow, we could then create freedom. It's something that, you know, I know you and I've talked about this. We both run into this. It's like so many people out there, they lost track of why they got in. It's like you became an investor to be free, not to get a new job. And if you're flipping and doing short-term transactions, good for you. But understand what you have, a job. That's what it is. And there's a whole lot more risk than you ever imagined if the market does a little off.
And a lot higher taxes.
And a lot higher taxes. Oh, yeah. You're paying the maximum taxes and they're just going to get higher. I mean, a couple of years ago, the market didn't even go down, but you would have thought watching social media that, you know, we were in 2008 again. It's like, guys, gals, nothing's wrong. This is an easy peasy time. How can you be losing money hand over fist? Because the reality is they weren't even investing. They were just buying properties, hoping they'd go up. And if they went up, they made money. And if they didn't, they lost. And so they lost. So we were just, you know, in the beginning, man, we worked hard in the early days, you know, in that 89 through 92, we did 400 houses the first 3 years and we were averaging $142 a month and I got half. So I did all that work for $71 a month, but we built the over time income streams went up, you know, now they're $800 to $1,200 a month on the exact same houses. People go like, oh, I wish the good old days when houses were 50 grand. Nah, you don't, because interest rates were 12%. You really don't want them. And so just, you know, we designed a whole model, had to create the systems. By 92, we had down. I look for my excitement outside of my business. So, you know, I don't need to go conquer and master new things. We know what we do. We do extraordinarily well. And we've just done thousands and thousands of properties. A couple of years ago was pretty exciting. We know there's more, but we know of over 1,000 of our students who have over 100 properties in portfolio. We call them that. They actually came up with a name with it, a Burley Century Club. And we have over 1,000 of them. You know, and those are people that are worth, you know, on the low end, 25, 30 million. And many of them are worth over $100 million. We all do very, very similar things. Yeah, and so it was unique. The other thing is we really looked at and we reverse engineered the business, Sharon. Most people are just worried about themselves primarily. And I get that. And we all have that interest, but we were like, let's do this opposite. Let's never call a resident, a renter or a tenant again, because in the modern world, there's no good positive connotations around that. So they're residents and owners. And what we do is we strive to let the families own a home. So the families that can't own a home, we provide ownership with owner financing. We have thousands and thousands of families who have moved in and paid their home off. And that's my portfolio, not my students. And so the first thing is like, let's really structure this so the resident wins. Let's give them a home. let's give them 10, 15, 30 years to own the home, like a regular person. Let's let them build up equity. Let them then take care of it. Because we all know we're stereotyping, but you know, this isn't CNN or Fox. We all use stereotypes because they're mostly true. Of course, there's an exception. A stereotype. If you're a drug lord, it rarely ends well. Not too many drug lords live to 90 years old and die peacefully surrounded by their family in bed. It's usually not a good death. You have a run there, but it doesn't end well. And so ours was, let's give the families ownership and let's let them own the home. They take care of the homes. They improve the value. So it's not like we're doing pad splits or, you know, this stuff where the neighbors don't want you. We're not putting Airbnbs next to your home. We're putting a homeowner next to your home. So the values go up, the homes get improved. We get a really good, great return for long, long term. And, you know, our clients pay for decades and decades and decades. So it's just consistent cash flow with, you know, nice back ends on the end, but it was just designed around that. And then what I did differently is rather than just trying to buy them no way down and, you know, and those sub twos and that stuff, we've done over 500 of the sub twos and another like 500 owner financing deals over the years. But those are to me just like free houses. Those are just like the extra houses that came in because of the volume we did. What we really wanted was just, you know, look, in most areas, the banks are the ones with the money and they have the money that institutionally is at the lowest cost. So, you know, we just raised and raised and raised hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions, almost a billion now, in private equity money that we place in. We split the profits 50-50. And through 23, we've never had a, that's my dog Titan. Through 23, we've never had a losing year. Because it's interesting when the owner manager owns it and is only paid on earnings, it's amazing how much better properties do than when they're paid property management fees. So we eliminated the management fees and just went with the idea of ownership and returns.
And it actually is a very unique model. And yet what you've done is you've perfected a system, a true buy and hold, right? Buy, hold, yes, and grow. And putting ownership into that formula gives you that kind of longevity. So I think it's such these clients that you talked about, these 1,000 clients, they learned from you on how to do that process. So you bring people in and teach them the methodology that you have. They can invest with you, but you'll also teach them how to do it on their own, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. We have students that literally come in. We do, we do three public events a year. We have students come in from all over the world. We teach them our private equity model specifically, you know, exactly how we do it. I know a lot of capital investment research talk to them is like going, wow, half the profits. But then when they really start to look at the model, it's like going, okay, half of, well, an old mutual friend of ours, Robert Kiyosaki, used to say on the stage all the time, half of what Burley makes is more than I ever made. And it was the truth. Because and that was an era when he was farming a lot of his investments out to myself and Shopoff and other people that we both know, because he was just so busy driving. You both were so busy traveling the world, driving the model, you know, the rich dad brand, that it was, you know, they just didn't have time to do the investing. So we did it. And so what we do is we design it where our capital investors actually make a higher rate of return than they make or they ever made before. And it's every year for years and years and years and years and years. I know when I really talk to capital investors, you know, they'll have this laundry list of things they want, but especially it's something that we've been going through, you know, since the 10 to 12 era. There's a lot of people who have inordinately large amounts of money in cash. There's trillions of dollars in pension money that's in cash, non-deployed, so much. And they're like, well, I just need this and this and this. And what they're not connecting is, the problem isn't finding the right deal. The problem is they're so scared internally on a subconscious level with losing that they don't deploy. So, I mean, when we do our talking points, which we teach, I mean, first thing we talk about is like, look, safety. It needs to be safe. For about 75% of people, their core need is safety. For about 25%, the core need is security. And I don't know which one an individual is. I know which one I am. And so we really talk about the safety and the security, having the money be safe, have the money being secure. And I learned this, you know, my financial planning days, you know, all the movies are like, oh, we need to wheel and deal and in and out. And the reality is most of my clients just wanted to feel they made a really good decision. And then didn't have to worry about it again for decades. Just take care of it, John, because they're not investors. It's not what they're supposed to do. They're out there doing what they do to make their high incomes. And then we deploy it for the long term. We focus predominantly on cash flow, and you guys made cash flow a household word. Thank you. And
well, you focus, but you focus on the assets that generate the cash flow.
That's all we wanted.
I talk about, you know, when the assets are sexy assets, you put them in your asset column and they become your employees and they work for you for years, which is the model that you teach and that you deploy.
Yeah. I mean, most of our properties we hold for decades, you know, and yeah, obviously we take advantage of all the tax benefits and all the good stuff. Residential offers some stuff that's not available for commercial. There's a couple things that we can strategically take advantage of, and we do. You know, we have to pay our taxes, but we're in America. Judge Leonard Hand told us in 34, we're entitled to pay the least amount we can. And so we do. We spend a lot of time structuring that. I know with your background, we've had these conversations. And then we just focus on, you know, a great rate of return for the long term. And then I think the reason most people do real estate long term is not the reason we do it. Most people do it for capital growth. And we get a lot of the capital growth, a lot of the appreciation. But that's not why it was. I mean, our internal spreadsheets literally were designed. First of all, you don't need a spreadsheet to buy a house. If you do, you got issues. It's a single family home. We've all been in hundreds of them just growing up, whether you ever invested or not. You know, the numbers work or they don't. It makes a great rate of return the day you buy it or it doesn't. And so I always, on my internal spreadsheet, Sharon, my tax benefits are zero because I was around, you know, Tax Reform Act of 86 when they just butchered and destroyed commercial real estate tax benefits. So they could change that tomorrow. And then the other thing is I always just put the growth rate down to zero. So, you know, the investment property without emotions makes rate of return based on its income stream, cash flow after real expenses, or it doesn't. And if it doesn't, we go to the next one. If it does, we acquire
it. The day you buy it. Yeah. Your profit's made on the buy, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's always on the buy because the sell is unknown and it's based on the market. And, you know, how I was trained and how I've always looked at it, as the founder and the CEO of our private equity company, my sole job, that's it, is to reduce and mitigate risk. That's it. It's not to make wow returns, which of course by reducing and mitigating risk we do. It was figuring out everything that could go wrong and then having a plan to fix it when it did. Well, and obviously with big portfolio, you know, we have more things go wrong most months than most people will have in a 40, 50 year career. But to us, it's just like, you know, welcome to Tuesday morning. And that's because Monday morning, we focus on making it rain, not putting out other people's fires. And it's just, you know, it is what it is. It's just part of the model. And it's one of the things we really are proud because we're one of the few people that really teach students like, look, here's the good stuff. And then here's what goes wrong. And then when it goes wrong, here's what you do because it will go wrong. You know, when I hear people talk about, oh, yeah, it's real estate. Everything goes good. It's like, it's real estate. Things break all the time. Things go wrong at your house, Sharon. They do at mine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Regularly.
Yeah. We're up at our mountain home and the downstairs air conditioner is chugging too much. Guys, he was supposed to come this morning, but I moved him back just in case. Yeah. And it's just, yeah, stuff goes wrong. It's real estate. It just is. You deal with it and move on.
It's just a fact of life. It's not if, it's when, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It just always is.
So the million-dollar question right now is, you and I have talked about this. We're looking, people are so afraid of buying right now because the interest rates are so high, or someone's afraid they're going to have to pay too much for a house because of the fact that there's a low supply, high demand. But my feeling is, you know, it's all the numbers and the numbers that would tell the story. So talk about what you see right. What I see right now in the industry is a lot of people that were in the industry of kind of fizzled out because it's not as easy as it used to be, but the deals are still there. So talk about your thoughts of the real estate market right now.
And you always go right to the perfect questions. I think what's underlying around all that for people is fear. And, you know, everybody's like, wow, we're going to have another big crash. And it's like, so let's just look at the facts. You know, the facts are, you know, big crashes happen every 60 to 90 years. That's facts. You know, in the United States, we've had four big crashes in our history. And we have charts to go back to 1765, 1790, 1872, 1932, and 2008. That's it. Those are our four huge crashes. I think the first reason they happen every 60 to 90 years is that it's not that history repeats itself, is that the people who went through it, who suffered, they pass away, And either the children or the grandchildren don't remember the stories. See, I still remember my grandfather's stories. I still remember his stories about the Great Depression. I mean, I remember literally, you know, in 87, calling a friend of mine who was like 85 years old, who was one of the biggest, most prolific investors I ever knew. And it's like, are we here, Mike? And he goes, nah, it's not across all sectors, John. This is not 32. It's like, okay. Because it would have been early on the timeline, but it was possible. I remember, you know, in 2000, 2001, it's like, hey, this is it. Nope. Okay. But we're positioning, we're building the war chest. Because when times are really good, the bad comes. So the market cycle, they go through growth, prosperity, recession, depression over and over and over again. About every 14 to 18 years, we do a cycle. The big ones are 60 to 90 years out. So based on that, could it happen? Yeah, but there's no history. Be like, well, that's only 1765. Okay. The English Commonwealth, as we call it today, has got charts going back to 1100s. You go into, you know, Rome, which is Italy today. They go back 4,000 years, you know, Greece. We got charts going back over 6,000 years. It just doesn't happen like people say. Yeah, the next thing is Wall Street. Wall Street since 34 has underwritten the government's debt, what we call the good debt. And conspiracy is, oh, well, the treasury is going to go, look, if the treasury collapses, it doesn't matter. So what's the difference? It's like, well, we're gonna buy a home in Honduras. So when America falters, like, if America's in flames, Honduras doesn't even exist anymore. It's like, you know, I did, people go, how come you're not into conspiracy theories? It's like, well, there's a real good reason. They virtually never happen. And I can't do anything about them anyhow. So why waste my time and energy? Yeah, I remember being asked at an event because my son had just been born. It was 1994. This lady's going, why are you spending all this time building these assets when everything's going to crash? I'm like, well, we don't know if it's going to crash. And if it does crash, I'd rather crash with 1,000 houses and a couple million in the bank than crash where you're at, because you don't even have money for lunch. Well, it's all going to crash, so I'm waiting. And she's like, wow, talk about a story. You know, and so, you know, Wall Street got greedy in the last run. And this is good for, see, in the eight run, Wall Street got greedy, and with the government's assistance in pushing, they put out all those toxic loans.
Yeah.
They bought bad debt, and it collapsed. They were insulated, but the rest of the world wasn't. This time, Wall Street didn't buy bad debt, didn't create it. Wall Street bought the assets. And everybody goes, oh, Wall Street owns all, but the reality is Wall Street owns 3% of single-family homes. It's a small amount. Almost 64% are owned by single family homeowners. Mommy and daddy, mom and pop, grandma and grandpa own their house. The majority of rentals are still mom and pop, 25 units or less. Wall Street doesn't own America. But the moment Wall Street bought those houses, it raises the bottom forever, because they're not going to be selling them for big dumping losses. They're just going to go it. And some of them aren't very good. I mean, you know, we can go down the black, you know, stone. I mean, you know, they're in default on their primary fund. They can't meet their redemptions. You know, and they're supposed to know what they're doing. And to me, it's just kind of like, wow, you guys don't have money now? What are you gonna do if something goes wrong? You know, I think the idea is out there is, you know, the supply and demand, it's there and it's real. You know, if you're doing your own home, I would say do what people did when I was young. Buy a home you can actually afford for real if something goes wrong.
What a novel concept.
Wow, I mean, just because you can get a $900,000 loan doesn't mean you should buy a $900,000 house. You know, we've always lived extraordinarily well below our means, which was interesting. Again, with the exception of 4 or 5% of those 1,000 people that I know, they all lived extraordinarily well within their means. It was one of the reasons they got wealthy. And oh, 90% of people get rich in real estate. That's a complete crock. They didn't get rich in real estate. They got rich off their profession, their high paid profession, or their business. And then later they invested in assets. And one of the assets that did very well for them, real estate. But they didn't get rich on real estate. They got rich on their income that they deployed into real estate. These seminar guys and gals, 90%.
Yeah, I say they either made it or they primarily held it through real estate.
Right. I mean, we would be one of the extreme exceptions, because we actually did make the bulk of our wealth from real estate. But my clients didn't, because, you know, in the very beginning, I worked with a lot of, you know, mid-level investors. But, you know, after like 92, 93, we only worked with high-end accredited. Most of them were deca millionaires. You know, and they were already rich. We were just deploying it way safer, way more security. And they loved it, because it's like, wow, if you don't make money, your family doesn't eat. You'll make money. And that's a big difference. You know, buy a home that's realistic and you can afford, especially if it's an earlier home, which is a starter home. You know, and my grandfather lived and walked this. He was an admiral. He was Navy for 49 years. He fought in 1, 2, Korea, and Nam. Got promoted in the Lend-Lease program and ended up an admiral. He ran away and joined the Navy when he was 15 years old as an E-1 swabby, and ended up, you know, with 3 stars when he retired out. And he didn't talk about it, but it's how he lived. What you think of me is none of my business. And then, more importantly, it was implied, I don't care. So he truly didn't care. And I would see, because my grandmother was worried, and she would do anything she could do to get him into dress whites. And he just wanted to wear fatigues and act like a regular guy. And, you know, and they had to do an entertaining and a lot of that stuff. And, you know, he wasn't into it. And she was all worried. She was always complaining about their house because it was just a regular house, but he loved it and it was his home. You know, she wanted a big, big mansion, and he didn't want to waste the money. And, you know, when he passed away, grandma was wealthy beyond her imagination. She actually had no idea they had as much as they did. They had quite a bit more. I think he thought if she knew, she'd spend it. So it's like, you know, if it's your own home, don't care what the neighbors think. Don't care what your friends think. Get a home that you can afford, pay the sucker off. And then, you know, 5, 10, 15 years, when it's free and clear, or you have hundreds of thousands of equity, start upgrading and moving up. You know, and stop paying attention to social media. That's just filled with posers.
I say teach, you know, let your assets buy your comfort.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Invest in the assets, let the assets grow. And then you have more flexibility because you're buying your luxuries from the cash flow of the assets. The assets are still generating it every month.
So. Oh, for sure. And one of the big things that we teach, look, is there's a lot of low interest rate loans that are in play. They're technical, but you can take control of them with or without assumption. It's actually something that we talk about at our events. I don't know if you've let the cat out of the bag, but August 24th, you and I and a friend of mine, Steve Trang, are doing a one-day very special event. I'm really looking forward to it. And I will be teaching, you know, how we buy houses without having to get the loans, because a lot of the properties we've been buying in the last 2 years have been existing financing. So we're buying houses we had one at 1.75 interest, which is crazy. But most, they had bought it way down. But most of the ones we're getting are 2.5% to just under 4%. So the numbers work. You know, if you can get a 3.5% loan, pretty much any house, positive cash flow, as long as you're not, you know, buying a mansion, obviously, because those aren't cash flow properties. And then we're still buying regular houses. Our students are still buying regular houses. It's, you know, learning to buy the right house in the right neighborhood, but then you have to be very specific. It's where we have a huge advantage over Wall Street. They're just trying to place for fees, so they're overpaying and they're not buying the right house. So we, you know, we discovered all the intangibles, you know, and a fourth bedroom gets you $200 more a month than a three bedroom, but the fourth bedroom doesn't cost you $200 a month. If you see a very local thing, City of Phoenix has 3 of the largest trucking companies in America in Phoenix, and the truckers own their own cabs, so they were parking them on the street. So about 25 years ago, City of Phoenix passed a regulation that you cannot park your cab on the street. So they were spending back then $200-$400 a month. Now they spend almost $1,000 a month to have a storage place to park their cab. So you have to park it. The wife has, stereotyping, the wife has to come and get him with the kids middle of the night. It's just a mess. If I've got RV parking, an RV side gate on a house, to them, that's a place to put my cab off the street. That gets me $250, $300 more a month instantly. You know, in Phoenix, if there's a pool, you get $150 to $200 a month more. You get all these things, and it's like, I'm not going to own it. They own it. They just pay me. And so we look at all the intangibles and all the things that we can squeeze out a much higher rate of return. Because, like, I wouldn't buy the City of Phoenix. I wouldn't buy a lot of the neighborhoods, but the neighborhoods I buy in, I wouldn't buy all the houses. Of 10 or 12 houses is up for sale, I'd buy one because I know the income stream. So I'm not looking at the price of the property. I'm looking at the return on the income stream. And so it's a different buy. And so we really quantify what makes the highest rate of return, and that's what we go for. So look, there's deals out there. The thing is that, and a lot of people, because we work with realtors all the time, and you hear it, I think I'm hearing it more now than I have in 15 or so years. I was like, wow, John, if I'd known they'd taken that, I'd have bought it. Well, you wouldn't. And you don't know what the answer is until you say no. I've had times in my career when literally 3 written offers bought me a house. And I've had times in my career when once it was 48. We had to make 48 offers to buy one house. It's just, you know, these are the numbers and they work. We know what the return has to be. We don't compromise that, and we just work. There's a lot of openings in the market right now. You've got a lot of people teaching, and no offense, it just is. They're teaching stuff that's 40, 50 years old that marginally worked back then, but there was no information. It wasn't there. I mean, there were no foreclosure lists. There was no huge computerized MLS. Heck, there wasn't even computers in homes and offices at that point. And so a lot of those models just don't work. And what we're just trying to do is just get rich for real and create a portfolio. You know, for us, it's not passive. That's a misnomer. It's residual because there's work involved. We have managed a portfolio. You know, a lot of our people at like 20, 25 houses, they get their first employee. They realize that, wow, the amount of money I pay then, I would make so much more money, or not make more money, just have those 20 or 30 hours a week to go do something fun with.
That's right. Get your time back. And that's the essence of what you're doing. And that's we want to talk again about the event we're doing in August, because everybody watching and listening, you're here, you know me, you know my background. I only highlight people who have been there, done that, and know what they're talking about. And there's so much hype out there right now. So many experts that are selling their expertise, and yet they don't own the kind of real estate that John does. They haven't had thousands of transactions, thousands of decamillionaires. He has the opportunity to share what he's done repeatedly over and over again for the last 40 years. You've been in real estate for 40 years.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone today that knows the market as well as John does from a standpoint of, and it's not just Arizona, you've got properties all over the world and in many, many states. But it's, you know, to have that expertise, we talk about the importance of mentorship, the importance of having people. If you're not a seasoned real estate investor yourself, you need to align with a seasoned real estate investor so that you don't make the mistakes that beginners make. And that's the beauty of having somebody like John on your team. Right, John?
Thank you, Sharon. Yeah. Look, there's no substitute for experience. It just is. You know, people like, you know, so much. It's like, yeah, but I know what I know because I figured out every mistake you could make and did it. I mean, there's literally almost nothing you could do wrong on a property that I didn't do. I did get smarter later. I could learn from other people's screw-ups. And the main thing is, yeah, we stay in control of the emotions. We teach people the exact model, the good and the bad, the pros and the cons. You know, the model we ended up now, I mean, what I wanted is I looked at all the cool stuff in notes, and there's a lot of great stuff in notes. It's like, okay, I want all of that. And then I want all the good stuff of owner financing. But I also wanted all the good stuff of rentals. And it's just like, so how do I eliminate the bad stuff? How do I keep the good stuff? And then just investing for a rate of return for real that happened every month.
You're still doing it today. So it's not, you're not teaching what worked 30 years ago. You're teaching what you're actually doing today.
Yeah. Yeah. Real world. And with my graduates, which are all around the world, I mean, I'm in touch with what's going on markets. I was actually on the phone with a guy, Eric, who lives in Pittsburgh, who's looking at a deal. He's going to walk away apartment buildings. He's going to walk away with over $10 million. We're kind of going through, and we were talking. He's a good friend. He met him as a student and became a great friend. There's so much opportunity out there, but you really do need to know how to dot the I's and cross the T's. There's a lot to learn. And it's look, you're not going to be an expert your first year or two. You can become very rich your first year or two, but it's years before you really master anything. Nothing is like instant, easy peasy like it sounds. And, you know, I love the influencers, although I hate the word because it reminds me of when people used to call themselves gurus. It's like, oh, geez, you're not a guru. You're a guy named Fred. You know, it's like when someone opens up with, this is really easy and anybody can do it. I know best case scenario, they're a deceiver. Or they're a fool, or both, because it's not really easy, and everybody can't do it. Physically, mentally, could most everybody do it? Yeah. However, most people aren't willing to change their internal story to do it. I mean, we do have a pretty famous student. His name's John. He lives in outside of Dallas, Texas. He's got over 600 houses, and I'm going to use a term here. It's an older term, but it's the term he uses to describe himself because it's what he learned. He was born mentally retarded. I know we have new words for it. But if you're born with very limited capacity, when people start changing what you're called, that's hard for you because you don't understand the changes. And he has over 600 houses on the Burley model. in literally pretty much any room you've ever been in, he would be the lowest IQ of everybody in the building. And he's one of the richest men sitting in the building because he took the model. He used to always go, look, he spoke at several of the events. He'd do a 10 or 15 minutes kind of aw shucks. And he has a really good self-deprecating humor once he got a little confidence. But he'd always go, look, man, you probably figured out I'm not the sharpest axe in the barrel. He goes, matter of fact, I don't think I'm actually in the barrel. I think I fell out of it. But he'd go like, look, this is here's what you do. You just need to be stupid enough to believe, you know, and then do what you're told. The advantage he had is, unlike a lot of people, he couldn't change the steps around. You know, there's 12 steps to acquiring a property. He couldn't invent new steps. He couldn't change the orders around. He literally was in a class with 17 rocket scientists from NASA. So I was working with a promoter, and they'd literally done a promotion in Houston, and they had 17 rocket scientists and one of the lowest intellect people I ever taught. And to my knowledge, none of them ever did a deal. And he has over 600 properties.
I love that. That's a great story. I love it.
He's a dear friend, and he's one of the most special people I've ever worked with.
I love hearing that. So before, we're going to have the link in the show notes, but it's johnburley.com/Sharon/special. Because if you're watching and listening to this podcast, we want to make sure you get a special price to be able to come. It's like $47. So there's no excuse not to come, because you're going to be fed lunch, the whole thing. We're going to be there all day. You're going to be learning from both of us. And tell us a little bit about our third speaker.
Yeah, so you got the link there. So you got Sharon, which you guys know Sharon. Wow. And I'm going to be talking about the creative financing side. I'm going to be talking about the 7 talking points we do when we raise money. So we're just going to show you how to do it for yourself. Steve Trang is one of the greatest wholesalers in the history of Arizona. He has shifted now, and he's starting to build a longer-term portfolio. But he's going to teach you guys that want to learn the wholesaling, the internet, is going to do that. He's also taken some of the great works of some of the greatest masters, some of whom are friends of yours and mine, Sharon, and he's going to be teaching selling and influence. He's got a great podcast. He's a super guy. Massively well received whenever he speaks. So he's going to come, and kind of where this is when Sharon and I were having lunch a couple months ago, we're like going, hey, we've just started doing these. I've got a lot of great friends from the businesses you do, Sharon. And like all of us, it's like, you know, the friends and the family. And for me, then still my core business commitments, it's like, I don't want to travel as much. I still want to teach because I love the feeling and I love helping people and seeing them, you know, go on and build financial independence. I just don't want to travel. The roads, if you've ever traveled for a living, the sexy goes away the second week on the road, let alone, you know, the third or fourth decade on the road. It's just not there. And so we thought, why not bring the road home? So we're going to do a couple of these a year with different people. I'm honored, so honored to have you on this one, Sharon. And so I look forward to meeting a lot of your people, and we're going to have a great day. I will tell you guys, this will be standing room only, seats filled. So when you hear about it, don't think about it. Just book. Because, you know, if you wait to the last minute, there'll be no seats. The last one we did, there were no seats. Right. So there'll be no seats. So get in there quick. You'll meet a lot of successful people. And then you meet a lot of people who want to become successful.
And you're going to be in a room of people that want to be successful. So you're going to, I talk about the importance of the environment you're in. You're not just there to learn from John and from us. You're there to learn from each other as well. And there are going to be people in the room that have become millionaires through John's advice and through other, we're really going to be digging deep into the industry of real estate. And so go to johnburley.com/SharonL. I forgot the L before. johnburley.com/SharonL/special. All right. So that you can get the discount. But again, the link will be in the show notes. And John, thank you so much. I'm just so glad we reconnected and looking forward to having a great day with you in August.
Oh, it's really special. And one thing, make sure you guys come with your questions, because we stay and answer them. But we finished the day up for the last hour. We do an expert panel with the three of us. And it's just open Q&A, whatever you guys want to ask, we'll answer. And those are pretty exciting. I love those. And we'll also have, we already got about a half dozen of our Century Club members who are already booked into the event. So you'll be able to meet with people who've really done it. And to me, it was always like, you know, don't ask me if what I do is great. Ask my graduates. That's who can tell you the truth.
The proof is in the pudding. That's right.
There you go. Hey, thank you very much. God bless to everybody. Sharon, again, thanks to you and Mike. Take care.
Well, thank you, John. We're so delighted to have you as friends. And now we'll be able to teach together as well. I'm looking forward to that. And you're going to hang in there because we're going to do a short recording for the private Facebook group, the Play Big Movement. And if watching and listening, if you've not joined that group, please do. It's free. It's a group of people that have basically committed that they want to be number one in their field. They want to live their legacy, which is created every single day with every heart you touch, and create maximum impact.
So you'd certainly be the person to teach that.
Yeah. Thank you, John. Take care. And for all of you watching and listening, thank you. We truly appreciate your participation in this episode of the Play Big Movement podcast. And until next time, you're fabulous.
Thank you for listening to this segment of the Play Big Movement podcast. Please subscribe to iTunes and leave us a review, as well as join us in other areas of social media, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Sharon Lecter, and for Facebook, author Sharon Lecter. Thank you so much and have a fabulous day.